Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Writer Reina Grande was only two when her father left their home in Iguala, Mexico, for the U.S. Extreme poverty led her mother to follow. Grande and her siblings were raised by their grandmother in Mexico. Reina made her own journey north at age 9 to join a now separated mother and father she hardly knew. She entered school barely knowing English. When English became her main language, her knowledge of Spanish was frozen at a third grade level. Grande has written about the struggles of assimilation, the severing of her mother tongue, and the healing power of storytelling in memoirs like The Distance Between Us and A Dream Called Home. Grande's latest work is a memoir told in essays, Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. It's her reflection on past experiences as seen from the more mature Reina Grande of today. Grande considers writing a healing process. I ask if she encourages readers who have suffered similar traumas to write their pain.
I do encourage people to write, but even like when I do a lot of speaking at schools, for example, you know, I encourage the young people to write on their journals. And I say, you don't have to write for publication. You write it for yourself. But I also encourage them to find other healthy ways, because I know that writing is not for everybody, right. And I'm not going to force it down their throats either, you know? So I do encourage it. I say, you know, it helped me. It might help you. Or you can look at other ways. Like there's, you know, sports, there's music, there's dance, there's gardening, there's sewing, painting. You know, there's just so many, like, creative ways for us to express ourselves that are healthy ways. And that's what I'm always stressing, because as human beings, we need to let it out, right? And some people turn to drugs or alcohol. Whereas I think if you can find a more healthy way to deal with your emotions, it would really make such a big difference. But they have to be expressed, you know, all those things that we go through, because otherwise we either implode or we explode. We either self-harm or we harm other people. And that's what I saw with my father. You know, my father used to drown his trauma in a can of beer to the point where he literally killed him from liver cancer. And when I would watch my father not know how to deal with his pain, I told myself, I need to find a better way to do that so that I'm not hurting myself and I'm not hurting other people.
As a writer, and I know so many other writers, they do get very personal when they're writing things that I think your average reader would be like, I'd never tell that about myself. But, you know, you're sharing information about your health, or you're suffering from the horrible effects of a LASIK operation,
yeah,
or a keratoconus. And you also shared about, you know, your struggles with menopause. I relate, but it's really kicking your butt from what you write here in the book. And so I'm wondering, I think there's two questions here. I think, do you think a lot of, you know, what you're experiencing in your health right now, could that have been sort of an accumulation? Because we carry trauma with us often from generation to generation. Mm-hmm. Do you think that might have just maybe somehow erupted in your body as a result of all that? And I guess the second question I have is, how are you right now?
How are you? Well, I think I've gone through the worst of menopause.
Okay, good. Yeah.
No more hot flashes. No more sweaty nights. No, I think I'm at the other side of it now.
Okay,
and
good.
So it feels great. Yeah, for sure. I feel that trauma gets passed on. And in our bodies, right? Our bodies carry it. At this stage in my life, I'm trying to be kinder to my body. I'm trying to be more aware of the things that I do that might impact my body in a way that, you know, I didn't when I was a young girl. And I'm trying to have a different relationship with my body, for sure, and to be more careful to not overburden it. And that is something that I had to learn. And that essay, Not Everything is Peachy, I talk about the burden that women carry.
Yeah.
And how we feel that we need to be productive, right? Productive women, productive mothers, productive wives, and productive in our careers. And every hour of the day, we have to be productive. And I have that. Like, I don't know how to relax. I don't know how to not do anything. And that's something even my own daughter points out a lot. And she reminds me, like, Mom, just sit down and just relax, you know? Like, you don't have to be doing something every hour of the day. Like, but that's just my conditioning also. My father had a lot of flaws, but he was a very hardworking man. And that's how he expected us to be also, you know, to work very hard. But I feel that society puts a lot of pressure on women. It overburdens us. And so in that essay, Not Everything is Peachy, I'm talking about how I overburdened my tree when I refused to remove some of the peaches from it. And it was overloaded. The branches started breaking from the weight of the tree's abundance. And when I saw that, I realized that that's what I do to myself. How can I unload some of that weight so that I'm not bending or breaking?
And it's funny that you mentioned that. I was also realizing when I was reading your book that you seem to find a lot of metaphors in nature, in the world around you. Is that something that you're just sort of naturally drawn to, that you see something in? That is like something that I experienced. How you make those connections?
Yeah, that is really interesting, because I am constantly, the way I move around in the world, I'm constantly trying to find the metaphor and what it means. Like, what did that mean? And I do that in my gardening. You know, like the other day, I was growing poppies, those beautiful red poppies, and the orange California poppies. And after it rained, they all sprouted, but then I couldn't tell which one's a poppy and which one's a weed, because there were also a lot of quote-unquote weeds. I had to pull them out by hand, one by one, and I had to be very careful to distinguish.
I've been there. Yes. I know exactly. And
so as I was doing that, I was thinking, this is so much like revision. You know, when I'm revising my book, I read sentence by sentence, and then I ask myself, is this sentence, is it a weed or is it a poppy? Should I pull it or should I keep it? And then sometimes I can't tell, like in the early stages of when I'm writing, sometimes I can't tell if it's a weed or if it's a flower, you know. And so I leave it alone and I just keep writing. And then eventually, once they get a little bigger, like I'm able to see, okay, I don't need that. It's gone. And so then I start weeding my draft. I start taking out sentences, paragraphs. I also felt that way when I was pruning my roses this winter. I went out and I cut out, like, you know, several feet from my rose bushes, bringing them like really down. And before, I didn't want to prune because I just felt the pain, right? I was like, oh, like this must hurt my rose bushes. But then I realized that when I don't prune, then they don't produce that many flowers. But when I do prune, they're like completely covered in beautiful roses. And that's what I realized with my writing too, because sometimes for writers, it's so hard to prune. It's so hard to let go. But once you do, what remains, then it's able to bloom beautifully. And so that's what I'm learning from my garden about writing.
Reina Grande is the author of Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. It's her latest collection of essays in which she reflects about her past wounds and moves forward with healing.
When we come back, Reina Grande fights the urge to revise her earlier works.
And then I had to stop myself and say, no, like, I have to honor the way, you know, my younger self envisioned the novel.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
High gas prices got you down? If you're done filling up the tank, here's a thought. If you don't need it, donate that car to us. Visit tpr.careasy.org to get started. Proceeds benefit TPR.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Writer Reina Grande's catalog mostly reflects on her childhood immigrant experience, whether it's told through fiction in her first novel, Across 100 Mountains, or in her celebrated memoirs, The Distance Between Us and A Dream Called Home. Grande's most recent publication is a memoir told in essays, Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. As Grande told us in the first half of the program, she always has to be doing something. So I ask her about what she's tilling in her garden of ideas.
Well, I have a couple of projects. One of them is a tribute to Sandra Cisneros that is going to be published next year in 2027 by Texas A&M University Press and the Whitliff. I'm also brainstorming my next novel. I haven't started writing yet. I wrote the first sentence.
That's probably it. The hardest one to get out.
That's it. But I have been brainstorming. I have been researching. I'm going to start writing this summer. As soon as my book tour is over, I'll get started on
that. Is it going to be another historical novel, like your last one?
It's sort of, yeah, I mean, it is historical, but it's not going to be like a ballad of love and glory. This one is going to be a retelling of an indigenous legend, the Totonacas in Mexico, who were the first to cultivate vanilla. And they have this legend of how vanilla was created. And it involves a princess and a forbidden love. And it's a tragic story. And so I'm going to write a retelling of that. And so obviously it is going to be historical because it starts way in like the 1500s or so. But there's also going to be like magical realism. It's kind of like a fairy tale. So like I know what the tone is going to be. And it's probably going to be shorter than A Ballad of Love and Glory. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just so excited to start working on it.
Do you feel like maybe your style of writing is changing as you mature through life?
It definitely does change. It has changed a lot. And it's funny because like right now, Across 100 Mountains, my first novel is turning 20. And so we're going to release a 20th anniversary edition. And my publisher sent me the manuscript to review, and as I'm reading it, I'm reading something that I wrote in my 20s, and now I'm 50, right? So it's like half my life has gone by, and now so I'm reading my 20 something year old's writing, and I'm trying to like I'm editing it. I want to edit it, and then sometimes I cringe. I'm like, I can't believe I wrote that. So. Almost like what I do to my daughter, really. I'm trying to rewrite the whole thing and, you know, point out all its flaws. And then I had to stop myself and say, no, like, I have to honor the way, you know, my younger self envisioned the novel. But it definitely, my style has changed a lot because Across 100 Mountains was this minimalist style, you know. Very short scenes, very fast paced. It's mostly like a plot-driven story. And then A Ballad of Love and Glory became like this big epic with a lot of battle scenes and the long sentences and a lot of dialogue and long passages of like describing the setting and similes and metaphors and just imagery and poetic prose. Like, I don't know, it completely changed. But and now like I've changed it again with like Migrant Heart, you know, now it's essays. Now I've gone from writing a chronological linear narrative to now writing it in essay form. And even within the essays, there's some that are experimental. You know, there's one that's written like a play.
Yeah.
Another one's written like a dictionary. And so what I try to do with my books is that everyone that I do, I say, what can I learn about writing that I don't know yet? You know, what can I try that I haven't tried yet? And that's how I keep myself like growing as a writer and also being excited about writing, because I'm always looking forward to learning something new about writing.
Is there anything you'd like to add that I haven't talked to you about that you wanted to bring up in our conversation?
I want to talk a little bit about the title.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, and the cover art too, please.
Oh, yeah. So the cover art is amazing. It was done by an artist who goes by Calavera Katrina, and she just did such a wonderful job, because all I said was, I want a heart in the cover, and then that's what she came up with, this beautiful heart with a butterfly and a bee and flowers, and it really captured the tone of the book. And Migrant Heart, which is the title, I chose that because I wanted to celebrate my immigrant identity. And the title was in a way an act of resistance, because at the times that we're living through right now, it's not safe to call attention to being an immigrant. But I wanted to call it Migrant Heart and own that and say, no, I'm not going to hide who I am. I'm going to celebrate who I am. And then the subtitle, Essays About Things I Can't Forget, that one was inspired by Sandra Cisneros, because one of the advice that she gives to writers is, don't write what you remember, write about the things you wish you could forget. And I've always loved that advice, and I feel that that's what I do in my writing. I'm always writing about things I wish I could forget. But in the book, I ask myself, do I want to forget these things? Like, maybe I don't. Maybe what I want to do instead is reframe those experiences so that when I do remember them, they don't hurt as much. I can find the joy in them. And so that's what the subtitle is, and that's what the theme of the book is, you know, about forgetting, about remembering. This book, it's really special to me in that I feel it really encapsulates my whole identity, my child self, my young adult self, my middle-aged self, and then I'm able to write about my children, about being a mother, and about my husband, and really appreciate what they bring into my life, you know, how beautiful my home is. And I want to acknowledge that, because it took a long time to finally create the home that I always wanted as a little girl. And to give that to myself, but also to give it to my children, it has meant so much to me, and I think that's what I'm most proud of.
Well, Reina Grande, a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Reina Grande is the author of the new essay collection, Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. Here is Grande reading an excerpt from her book. This is taken from her essay, Not Everything is Peachy.
Issue 1. Not Everything is Peachy. I have a peach tree in my garden. In November, as the days shorten and the air turns crisp, she sheds her leaves and readies herself for the winter, a period of dormancy when she must conserve her energy and prepare for what's to come. Then it's spring, and like me, from the moment she awakens, she gets to work. Delicate pink petals burst forth from her buds, marking the end of winter. The blooms, fleeting and beautiful, leave a carpet of pink on the ground and make way for the new leaves of spring. And then the baby peaches appear,
tiny and full of promise. I watch them with a mixture of anticipation and protectiveness. I'm a self-taught gardener. Much like my writing, what I know about gardening is mostly from trial and error, and I've erred plenty. With my peach tree, my error is greed. As the baby peaches grow, I'm delighted at the tree's abundance, the potential of all that fruit. I know peaches need to be thinned when they're the size of a thumbnail, but discarding fruit feels wasteful. So I betray the tree and leave the fuzzy green babies cradled on her limbs. I dream of cobbler, sauces, and jam. I get my grill ready and buy a dehydrator. By June, as the peaches become plump, branches begin to bend or break under the weight. Yet they are smaller than they should be, overcrowded, and competing for space and nutrients. Heavy with fruit, the tree sags, its branches bearing the weight of its abundance, looking utterly, beautifully tired. I recognize that look.
Writer Reina Grande reading from Not Everything is Peachy. It's an excerpt from her book Migrant Heart, Essays About Things I Can't Forget. If you missed part one of our interview with Reina Grande last week, catch up at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. The program is produced by Marianne Navarro and Norma Martinez. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.
A year ago, one of the deadliest floods in U.S. history tore through the Texas Hill Country. Since then, we've been following up with survivors.
Everything is gone.
And people who lost loved ones.
I find myself just shaking my head, saying, I can't believe I find myself here.
You can hear their stories on the podcast After the Flood from the Texas Newsroom and PBS's Frontline, out now.